So I'm Dr. Mikkola Benson. I'm a sociologist from Goldsmiths, and I'm currently working on a project called Brexpats, which is all about what happens to the British migrants who live in Europe at a time of Brexit. So what's going to happen to them? And so this podcast series, Brexit Brits Abroad, is all about looking at that population and thinking about what the key issues are that affect them as Brexit unfolds. So what we're hoping to do through the series is to provide advice that might be helpful in the anticipation and management of potential consequences. But we're also going to start by doing a little bit of myth busting. In this episode, I'm speaking with Professor Karen O'Reilly, who's working with me on the project. And our ambition in this episode is to really talk about the diversity of the British migrant populations in Europe. So to talk about them in terms of the reasons why they're there, and about how this population is diverse and what that actually means for our understandings more generally about who the British are in Europe.
So one of the first sets of groups that comes to mind to me, for example, who you might not always think about, are people who actually are moving for work.
So, yeah, absolutely. The people that elsewhere in the world might get characterised by a different stereotype, actually, as a kind of corporate expatriate. But we also know that there are people moving for work within Europe, British people who work in some of the big cities, places like Frankfurt, Paris, Toulouse, and some of the big Spanish cities. In fact, all over Europe.
And so, we can say there are those who move for work, and maybe with their jobs, and maybe, you know, actually looking for a job. Sort of quite entrepreneurial types as well, who might be setting up their own work. There are a lot of those I know in Barcelona, for example, a lot of sort of creative types, artistic types, people setting up their own business.
So there's all of those people who we might classically refer to as kind of migrating for labour, who fall into our kind of more general understandings about what migration is and that its function that it plays within economies. But there are also students migrating to go and study abroad for periods of time or long term.
Do they ever stay on, the British students in Europe, do we know?
I think that this is one of the areas where we don't have quite so much information. We know a lot, for example, about certainly the more classic image of the British abroad. So the pensioners, for example, who live in Southern Europe. But there seems to have been, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that there's been a far smaller focus on British young people moving, which might include those creative types. So those young people who we know are moving to places like Berlin, for example, at the moment, because of what that might offer in terms of the opportunities at a period of time when it's incredibly expensive to continue living in places like London, which might be where the equivalent type of art and music scene is that they're trying to get involved in.
Yeah, and here you're talking about young adults, but I also want to draw attention to the fact that certainly in Spain, and I'm sure you'll confirm in France as well, probably in other places, we've got children, British abroad, who are actually children in schools, maybe in colleges, maybe less so in colleges, but certainly in schools. And this is certainly going to have some important implications for Brexit if they're in either an international school or a local school. And they really get overlooked in the literature and the media.
Definitely. I mean, I think that it's really clear, both from your work and from my earlier work, that among those people that we worked with in France and Spain, that there were families moving. So people moving with young children, bringing their children up there, or even people moving and having children in those countries. Because I think that the other side of this as well, that often doesn't get talked about, is the kind of dual national couples as well.
Right, yes.
So there are British women,
easy to overlook that,
or men married to other European nationals living in those places. So they are all included in this broad category, this broadened category of British migrants in Europe.
And then, of course, talking about children takes us to think about the other age. I think retired migrants or older migrants, we're much more familiar with those as British abroad. Certainly in Spain, maybe you can talk a bit about that in France. But certainly in my own work in Spain, one of the things that's annoyed me over the years, to be honest, is that there's been a tendency to focus on them as if they're all retired. And yes, as I've said in my book, they are on average an older population. So there are enough older people for that to affect the population as a whole. But these people are not all retired. So when we think about British in Spain, in the Costas, fairly stereotypical image of the Brit abroad is of retired people doing nothing much. But this is a really mixed population of retired people who are actually still working sometimes, younger people who are retired, people with families, entrepreneurial types. Another thing I wanted to just remind ourselves about were all these people who have, they didn't have particularly have all that much money. They just wanted to go and live in Spain, and they are doing all sorts of entrepreneurial things. And I always make the same joke that in the Costa del Sol, you can have your own haircut, from having your own haircut to having your dog's haircut without having to speak to anybody in Spanish, because there are so many people who've set up services and businesses to serve the English speaking population community. And actually not just English, just as a little aside here, there are Germans doing the same thing, Swedish people doing the same thing. So just to get back on theme, we are talking about a lot of retired people in some parts, but also, as you say, people with families, people with children, younger people.
But I also think that just not wanting to fixate too much on the retirees, but to think more generally, actually the fact that there are these broad populations with quite different sociological characteristics and with quite different motivations for being there, we need to really think carefully about why they might be there in terms of those broad structural issues. So why might it be, for example, at this point in time, that lots of young people are relocating to places like Berlin, just as in previous generations and continuingly, we find quite older populations moving to Spain? What might that actually be saying about the state of the British social structure, the kind of social support, welfare, healthcare, all of those types of things that might mean that people don't see a future living in Britain? And I think that that's a really important question to ask.
Or can't create the future for themselves that they would like to imagine. And I think that's something the project has to confront, actually, because there definitely is not enough information on that. So that's one of the things we're going to have to deal with in this project. Who are the British abroad now in terms of why they're moving, what they hope to have being there, and how they see the places they're going to, how they imagine those, and what that means about Britain and how Britain is today, and why they're leaving Britain, or why Britain isn't offering, you know, what they're looking for. So I think that's going to be quite interesting.
Absolutely. And I think that we've always, at the heart of both of our work on British people in France and British people in Spain, has been a real desire to move beyond the spectacle, of these British populations abroad. And certainly that's something that we would be continuing.
Tell me a bit more what you mean by the spectacle.
Well, I think that very often, certainly at the moment, when we're looking at the image of British migrant populations in Europe at a point in time where it looks likely that Britain is leaving the European Union, we have a kind of poster child. And the poster child, ironically, isn't a child. It is that image of that older British person living in the sun. Perhaps, I mean, you're more familiar with the stereotypes of the British in Spain than I am, and we're going to talk about that a bit more in another episode. But it has kind of become that thing that these are that population. And this is the image that we have in our minds, that's very prominent in the media, that's very prominent in these popular representations. Mm. Indeed, the other day on Twitter, somebody put out a call which said, were we sick of the way in which the media was depicting British people abroad? And they'd done like a screenshot, they'd gone onto Google and they typed in British migrants.
Right.
And all of those images were those same old images of people sitting in pubs in Spain
with a gin and tonic,
in the sun. You know, all of these types of
in a
of
very
images.
Loud T-shirt or Union Jack
exactly.
T-shirt. They are very stereotypical, and given the complexity we've just discussed, they're one of many other types of British people abroad. And also that stereotype doesn't tell us who that person is and how they live and what they're looking for and why they left Britain.
So I think that this is something that we've always been very concerned about, is to shift beyond those immediate representations. Often, you know, finding ourselves talking to a brick wall, but, you know, it's...
Yeah, it feels like that sometimes. So what about expatriates? Should we go back to that? Why we didn't like that word and why we've tried? So, I mean, one of the things I feel quite strongly about is that when you use the word... Well, no, let's rewind. Why should British abroad and perhaps other Westerners abroad be called expatriates when all other, let's say, south to north or east to west migrants get called immigrants or emigrants? you know, you're immediately putting Western migrants here, we're talking about British migrants, in a hierarchical relationship to other migrants.
Absolutely, and kind of presenting them as exceptional in some way. And I think that there are several ways into thinking about that again and thinking about the different relationships that it infers when you talk about British expatriates. But I mean, one of the other issues around that is precisely the connotations that that brings with it. We know from our work that British people who live in Europe push off against the idea that they are expatriates because they don't want to be perceived in those terms as the kind of, I suppose, the colonial
although
imagery
I have met
of
those
that.
Who do, but again, it's very mixed. But generally speaking, they'll say, well, they'll say, you know, and also bounce off against being a tourist as well, because obviously in Spain, very often, they're seen as tourists who stayed on. So we're not tourists, we live here. We're not, as Jackie Waldron wrote years ago, and we're not expatriates, you know, we want to integrate. They'll often talk about wanting to integrate, wanting to enjoy where they live and be part of where they live. And so that term expatriate has all sorts of negative connotations. So we're leaving it alone, aren't we?
Yeah, we are leaving it alone. It has those negative connotations from their points of view, but also from our point of view as academics working on this topic, we're very keen that we unpack the reasons why we would call these populations something other than migrants. Mm. And we've always talked about British migrants. In our written work, we've strongly argued for the recognition of this population as a migrant population.
So we're talking about British migrants in Europe, actually some of whom might look like corporate expats that Anne Mikey Fechter talks about, who are people who have moved abroad with the label of expatriate as part of their job very often.
Exactly.
And with a company, for a company, and it's a different thing. But those might exist, but we want to really distinguish, don't find that label particularly useful unless we're distinguishing the people who've moved abroad with their job as a corporate expatriate. Lifestyle migrant, that's another word we use quite a lot, but we're not talking about the British in Europe as lifestyle migrants, are we?
No, but I think that what we intended with that term was very much to identify the way in which lifestyle might be an aspect of the reasons that people choose to live in other parts of the world. And this was certainly something that came out very, very prominently in the work that we've done with those British populations in Europe. What those locations in Europe, what those destinations that they've moved to represent was something that could be encapsulated in terms of this idea of lifestyle.
Yeah, and this takes us right back to the beginning, Nicola, when we first met over 10 years ago and used to keep talking about how we had so many things in common, your work in France and mine in Spain. And in a way, that word lifestyle came out of those conversations, you know, about how they're looking for quality of life, how they're looking to fulfill some kinds of aspirations, how they have this kind of nostalgic or imaginative ideas about where they're going to live. And none of the other language of labour migration, economic migration, refugee, asylum, none of that worked for us, or retirement migration even.
No, that definitely didn't work for us. And I think there are very good reasons why it didn't work for us. Quite a lot of the language that we've been left with the legacy of migration studies, the legacy of governance structures, so kind of visa regulation, home office ministries of, you know, all of those, the ways in which migration is controlled and regulated is very much about securing labour through migration. And so when you're talking about populations who might not be moving for work and equally are clearly not your refugees and asylum seekers fleeing political persecution and other things, then we need a different language to talk about it. And that's really what we were trying to do there, recognising that we do live in a world where migration is not only about production. It's not only about labour.
And this links to the problem-centred approach to migration that we've also always wanted to resist, because, and I think that's why we enjoy researching British migration, because we're sociologists with anthropology backgrounds as well, and we just see it as a way of understanding a phenomenon, not as seeing it as a problem. So it's a sociological phenomenon of interest, not what should we do with these migrants, they're a problem, but who are these interesting people and how do they live and what can we learn about life from them?
So that takes us back round right to the end, really, of our discussion today, which is really, about, you know, you might be sitting there listening and asking yourself, well, why should we actually care? Why do we care about these British populations abroad?
Yeah, and I think, as we've just said, one of the reasons is because it's sociologically interesting. Through learning about British migration abroad, we're learning about British people, we're learning about migration, we're learning, and it's a great way of really challenging that problem focus on migration by turning it on its head and saying, actually, you know, Western people are migrants too. These counterflows are interesting because of how they challenge lots of assumptions about the flows that are seen as problematic. And let's not forget also, we are all talking about quite large numbers. You remind me how many we're talking about.
It's 1.2 million, I think, the latest estimations of the number of British people who live in Europe. And that's not even counting the people who might be there from time to time, people who regularly travel in.
I mean, that's hugely problematic, the number in itself, because in most countries, they're not even having to register. So no one knows how many are there or aren't. So that's probably, we're likely to be a huge underestimation. So we're talking about big numbers, and at the moment, through this whole Brexit process, they're feeling very, very insecure, as I understand it.
And I think that kind of takes us round to kind of a final comment that I wanted to make, which is about why we might care about this right now. And I think that the fact of the matter is that all of those structures that previously we assumed to be supporting British migration to Europe are about to be radically altered.
So, and in the meantime, they're just suspended. So exactly. It's like a massive holding of one's breath.
So our question really is, well, what happens to the British in Europe, British migrants in Europe at this point in time, and as Brexit starts to unfold?
Migrants in the UK are going through the same processes, so that's going to be interesting to compare those.
So just to wrap up, what we're saying here about British migrants in Europe is that they are a diverse population. They're not just that stereotyped image that we talked about quite extensively, but also it's really important to recognise that they are migrants, that they're there for a range of reasons. They're there for work, they're there to study. It includes children and families, single people, as well as married people, and that they might be there, they might be inspired to be there because they've been taken there by the companies that they work for, but they might also decide to set up their own businesses while they're there, or they might just decide that they like to live somewhere like that. So there are a range of different issues sociologically that we might want to tease out through talking about that, which are around issues relating to the reasons why they might have left Britain, what's going on in Britain at that point in time, as well as the reasons that they might want to set up in these countries. So what do those countries mean to them? And what types of lives can they actually lead once they're there? And at this point in time, where we're going through a major transformation, potentially with Brexit, where it looks like some of the things that facilitated their migration, so Britain's membership of the European Union, are changing, we need to ask what this means for their lives. And thank you to Karen O'Reilly, my friend and collaborator, long-time collaborator and co-author, for joining me today.
And thank you, Mikola, for inviting me. It's been great.
To find out more about the issues we've been discussing today, follow our Twitter feed at BrexPatsEU and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. And I'll see you in the next episode.